From the Liberty University Broadcast Studio, it's America's conservative blowtorch.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Todd Starnes radio program. Hope you're doing great. Want to welcome all of our new listeners on radio station KARN in Little Rock, Arkansas. Great to have you guys on board with us. And we have some exciting news. We're going to be adding a good many stations across the state of Nevada, and we'll be telling you more about that probably in the next week or so. Great to have you with us, though, on this what is this, week two of our quarantine? Geez, hello, ladies and gentlemen. 844-747-8868 is our toll-free number. That's 844-747-8868. Want to go right now to the Liberty University Newsmaker line. A good friend of this program, the great senator from Tennessee, my home state, Senator Marsha Blackburn. Senator, hope you're doing well today.
I am doing well. Thank you so much.
You know, I was reading your Twitter feed a little while ago, and I know you shared a story about some of the great things people are doing back in Tennessee. You know, we talk about the volunteer spirit. You've got places like Corky's and Rendezvous and Old Dominic, and they're out there giving back to the community, helping out. I mean, that really is the heart of who we are as Americans.
It really is. And Tennessee is called Volunteer State, and people are stepping up and helping. And we've got communities that are free of coronavirus. They have no cases there. And they're saying, hey, let us get back to work and let us send people to help. And I think that is what you're seeing happen all across the state.
You know, Senator, that is the big question. And we're hearing from a lot of small business owners. When can they go back to work? When can they reopen their businesses? What are you hearing, and what comfort can you give these folks?
You know, Todd, I think that this is going to be left up to the governors and to the mayors, and they know when their communities are ready. They know when their health care system is capable of handling the caseload. They know when they've been a few days with no coronavirus cases. They know when people are saying, look, we can do this. We do not have to have direct contact. We can practice the social distancing. They know how to make this work. And I think you're going to see a lot of businesses, by the time we get to the end of next week, they're going to be ready to open back up.
Yeah, I'm with you. We're hearing the same thing on this program. And at the same time, you know, we turn on the news and we see these stories. I mean, you know, we broadcast our show from New York City, and you would think that we are in the middle of the apocalypse here. And that is just simply not the case right now. And of course, the White House task force yesterday came out and said, look, you know, the reports we're getting, they still have plenty of hospital beds. They have plenty of ventilators. You know, it changes moment by moment. But right now, things are not as dire as we're being led to believe by some in the mainstream media.
Well, this is a serious public health issue, and we want to take it seriously, and we want individuals to receive treatment. We want them to absolutely call their doctor if they have constriction in their chest, if they have shortness of breath, if they have a cough and feel like they've got that bronchitis sort of feeling. Absolutely, they should call their doctor. If they are sick, they absolutely should stay home. And here's a great example for you, Todd. I had a call from a guy in West Tennessee yesterday, and he owns some businesses there. As you know, West Tennessee is farm country. And he said, look, we need to have planters going on. We need to be working. We need people showing up, and it's important. He said our people don't work in close proximity, and when they come into the barn, they can just stay separate and apart from individuals. But for them, they don't want to miss this entire planting season. They're excited about the trade agreements. They're excited about new opportunities for new markets, and they want this to be a good one. And I have to tell you, I get that. And that situation is very different from what you see in New York. And of course, we are sad for everyone and really have great empathy for individuals who are adversely impacted through loss of life, through sickness. We also grieve for those that have lost their American dream, their business, something they've dreamed of doing all of their lives. And I've talked to some of those individuals too. So I think the president and the vice president are being smart about this. They're approaching it by saying, you know, we're the different parts of the country will go back to work at different times. We have to flatten this curve. We have to make certain that all efforts are going into antivirals and to vaccines. This has been a great lesson for all of us in how we sometimes let government get in the way and things do not reach a successful conclusion when they're trying to work with the Food and Drug Administration or the Centers for Disease Control or the National Institutes of Health. And look how speeding up the process has moved us from research on a vaccine to clinical trials in a period of a month, something that before this crisis would have taken years.
You know, Senator, you have been at the forefront of this effort to call out the Chinese and to call for our country to end its reliance on China for the ingredients for many of these pharmaceuticals. Do you see hope that we can stop that and get that stuff back here on this, you know, in this country?
I do. And a few minutes ago, I had a text message from one of my Senate colleagues from somebody who has a pharmaceutical company. They've been following my legislation, the SAMC bill, and they were saying, we want to bring manufacturing back. It puts us at such a disadvantage and really is a risk to our health security and our national security when all the pharmaceuticals needed to treat certain diseases are in China. And on February 27th, the Chinese said, well, we may not let you have one of these active ingredients that goes into a drug that you think would be helpful against COVID-19. And we don't ever want ourselves to get into that position. Plus, you know, I had somebody this week, a Tennessean, call me and they said they took a heart medication that had just been recalled. And the reason it was recalled is because it was manufactured in China and contained a carcinogen. And so when they discovered that, they pulled all of it from the pharmacy, and this gentleman had to go in for other testing. We all remember when there was a shortage of vaccines, a shortage of antibiotics, and hospitals were just having to literally ration antibiotics. That's because of China, and China was making all these antibiotics, and lo and behold, there was one factory that did all of this one type medication, and that factory had an explosion and they had to close it. So these are the things we don't want to be vulnerable for, because it does, we have a healthcare issue that has turned into a financial crisis, and the relief bill that we passed this week, $2 trillion of our taxpayer money going back in to help stand up these businesses. So this is a vulnerability. We have identified it. It's a problem. The solution is to bring that manufacturing back so that we have multiple sources to receive some of these active pharmaceutical ingredients that we use to keep ourselves healthy.
All right, Senator, we're going to have to leave it there. We appreciate the update. Appreciate you fighting for the good people of the state of Tennessee and really the whole nation on this pharmaceutical issue.
Absolutely. I am honored to be there, and everybody be well and safe. Thanks,
all right.
Todd. Bye-bye.
You got it. Senator Marsha Blackburn, ladies and gentlemen, from the Volunteer State, giving us an update on this pharmaceutical issue. And this, look, this is an important issue for us folks. Those pharmaceuticals need to be made here in the United States of America on American soil. We can't be held hostage by the Chinese like we just got held hostage by the Democrats up on Capitol Hill. All right, look, got to take a quick break here, folks. 844-747-8868. That's a toll-free number, 844-747-8868. This is the Todd Starnes Show.
It's the Todd Starnes Radio Show.
Is going at it. She's flailing her hands and she's screaming and she's just going hysterical there on the floor of the House of Representatives. I don't know what it is with these female Democrats, but they have gone slap crazy. It's unbelievable. We're trying to effort some video and audio rather from the floor of the House. We'll bring that to you as soon as we get it. But man, it's getting a little crazy down there as they debate this massive spending bill, $2 trillion in spending. And they say some of the money is going to go to folks like you and me, and the rest of it's going to go to these pet causes of the Democrats. And the president says, well, that's what we just have to do. We can't fight the president seems to believe we can't fight the Democrats anymore. And so now President Trump is going after Congressman Thomas Massie. Congressman Massie is forcing a vote. And I say good for Congressman Massie. We need to get everybody on the record here. This is pretty despicable. What's going on right now in our nation's capital? They're squandering our money, our hard-earned money. And President Trump is very upset, but he's upset at the wrong people. Congressman Massie is not the bad guy here, Mr. President. It's the Democrats. The president says that Massie is a third-rate grandstander and says that he needs to be thrown out of the Republican Party. And so now you have former Secretary of State John Kerry, who is a traitor to his country and quite frankly should be thrown in jail for thwarting the president's efforts with the Iranians, with the Iranians. But instead, you have this guy out there, John Kerry, calling him a blank hole. Talking about Congressman Massie, a blank hole. And now President Trump is siding with John Kerry, the president retweeting that profane. What is going on at the White House? Could somebody explain to me what is going on at the White House? Have they had a coronavirus outbreak up there? Unbelievable. Oh, we've got the audio from AOC. Let's take a listen to the squawker.
What did the Senate majority fight for? One of the largest corporate bailouts with as few strings as possible in American history. Shameful. The greed of that fight is wrong for crumbs for our families. And the option that we have is to either let them suffer with nothing or to allow this greed and billions of dollars, which will be leveraged into trillions of dollars, to contribute to the largest income inequality gap in our future. There should be shame about what was fought for in this bill and the choices that we have to make.
Oh, my. She's a little fired up. She's a spitfire. All right, take it down a few notches, darling. Take it down a few notches. I mean, look, you got she was doing the jazz hands, though, at one point. So maybe that's like I don't know, maybe that was code for the folks over at Kennedy Center. I mean, they're getting their, what, $25 million? Jeez, Lou. Well, there you go, folks. This is what's happening right now in our nation's capital. Folks are going slap crazy. Avery, tell me what call screener Avery has been busy posting stuff to the live show blog. What do we have? You've got a great video.
Oh my gosh, I love this video. In order to post some stuff to the live blog, I've been scrolling through Twitter, you know, just to find some, either it's just something for a good laugh or something like that. And one thing that I have found is a video from Henry Winkler, the actor. It's not a video of anybody that he knows, but it's of this old lady who goes on, I can't remember, I don't know. What?
Jay Leno.
Jay Leno.
The old Tonight Show, back when it was funny.
Okay, so it was the Tonight Show. All right, got it. But she's being interviewed, and I believe she had just turned 100 years old, and she says that she went to Universal Studios, and she was wearing a dress there, and the wind was not being so very nice to her. I'm not going to give away the rest of the video because it's just hilarious. It's much more funny going to be coming from her mouth rather than mine.
Oh, this is a terrific video. So go to, folks, ToddStearns.com. Check out the live show blog, and you can see this for yourself.
It's so funny. It made me giggle. I loved it.
It's pretty fascinating. And we need it. We need some humor these days. I'll tell you that much. We definitely need some humor.
Yeah, for sure.
I can confirm he was giggling. I can confirm the giggle.
ToddStearns.com, folks, so you can check that out. But look, going back to the reaction that this country had to the swine flu epidemic, and you had far more many people were infected, and sadly, far more many people died. There was no shutdown of the country. And Senator Marsha Blackburn is sort of hinting towards this, that, you know what, if you're a farmer, if you live out in a farming community and your nearest neighbor's a mile or so down the road, there's really no need to self-quarantine. I mean, the crops have to get planted. The crops have to be harvested. And I do believe that come Easter Sunday, then you've got the Monday after Easter. That is going to be a bellwether day in this country. Especially if the president is out there telling people it's okay to go back to work. But let's just play make-believe here. What happens if the president says on Easter Sunday, you know what, folks, you're going to have to stay inside for another couple of weeks? What do you do then? I mean, you've got these state governments out there that have basically been turned into police states. Folks in the Commonwealth of Virginia can't even go to church on Sunday. The governor there, Ralph Northam, the guy who thinks it's okay to abort newborn babies, put out an executive order and told the people that you cannot go physically, you cannot go to a church house. And if you do go to a church house, you could be charged with a misdemeanor. In other words, you could be charged with a crime if you show up at your church on Sunday in the Commonwealth of Virginia. The same thing's happening in places like Illinois and also the great state of Texas. And we're going to have somebody on from First Liberty Institute in just a few moments to talk about that. And look, I get it. I mean, yeah, I don't think people ought to be congregating in large groups, especially if you're in that target group, the elderly folks. That's not a good thing to do. But should the government be stepping in and telling churches, you've got to shut your doors, and if you don't, well, we're going to charge you with a crime? Is that America? Is that the kind of a country that you folks want to live in? Is that what we really want to have happen in this country, where you're going to tell preachers, you've got to keep your doors shut for the sake of the public's health, and if you do not, we're going to charge you with a crime? I'd like to see where that is in the Constitution, that's all. I mean, if we're going to go ahead and just throw civil liberties right out the window, you know, I'd like to at least see that in writing somewhere. 844-747-8868. This is the Todd Stearns Radio Show. Stearns radio program. I want to go right now to the Liberty University Newsmaker line. Great to have Dr. Jeff Collier with us. Used to be the governor of Kansas, a surgeon, and he is working with the White House on issues regarding rural health, which is a big, big deal these days. Dr. Collier, great to have you on the program.
You know, it's great to talk to you again. How are you doing?
You know, I'm doing well. We're doing the show from here in Brooklyn, New York, in my home. We're sort of over
oh my.
the the house arrest. But everybody seems to be pretty, you know, in fairly good spirits around here.
same here in Kansas City. And we're not quite as tight as you are, but I imagine that'll probably happen soon around here. But our family as well.
You know, Dr. Collier, we're really suffering from a lack of facts and information, at least here in New York City. You know, we're hearing from elected leaders that the situation is pretty dire in the hospitals. We heard last night from the White House Coronavirus Task Force that there are still ICU beds available. There are still plenty of ventilators. And of course, that may change. You know, it's a rapidly changing issue. But for a lot of people, they're just kind of confused about how serious of a crisis this is.
Mm-hmm. And it is a serious crisis. I've been involved in a number of disasters and epidemics, you know, for measles and others, and worked around the world in a lot of different war zones. In many ways, this is kind of functioning like a war zone. On the one hand, though, is Americans have changed what's going on. The stay-at-home orders has changed this. What other very clever things that Americans are doing are changing this. We have some weapons, and one of those weapons can be hydroxychloroquine. We have some good data so far, not as conclusive as I would like or anybody would like, but it is the best that we have. And as we're going forward, we're going to get smarter, and we're starting to learn some very interesting things out there.
Let's talk about the situation with the smaller hospitals in some of those communities where you may have a county and that's the only hospital serving the region. What are you hearing from those hospitals, and how prepared are they to deal with the crisis?
So there are 1,350 critical access hospitals in the U.S. What a critical access hospital is, there's no other hospital within 35 miles. They generally have less than 25 beds, but they have to have an active emergency room. So this is the lifeline for a lot of communities. And these have been struggling for years. Over the years, they've been struggling, and about 30% of them are kind of right on the edge of financial problems. So this couldn't happen at a worst possible time. Fortunately, the president put some money in for rural hospitals in the budget. But the challenge here with coronavirus is one person in the community, if they get sick, they walk into the emergency room, they could expose the entire hospital, basically. And then you could shut down that hospital. So that's one risk that's out there. Other risks that are out there is making sure that they have the right personal protective equipment and enough things that, you know, they can, you know, survive financially as well as serve their patients.
I'm wondering about the Z-Pak as well. We're hearing that might be useful too.
Well, the data that we do have right now is limited, and it shows using hydroxychloroquine with a Z-Pak together in patients that are COVID positive. It appears that they are synergistic, but these are very small studies. The hydroxychloroquine side has a lot more data with it, but it appears that a Z-Pak with it may be helpful. So talking with your doctor, if you are COVID positive, that is our best option that we have right now.
In your estimation, as a doctor, as a surgeon, what are your concerns? What concerns do you have moving forward here? You know, the president's hoping things can start getting back to normal around Easter Sunday. What do you think about that?
You know, where we are right now is I think we're just getting ready to kind of peer around the corner and see what's ahead. It's going to take a little while for all of the data to peer out. I believe that, and I'm not speaking for the administration on this, but in my experience, we're probably going to have more like two peaks of this. One is we're going to slow this down. The weather is going to help. The humidity is going to help. Plus all of the things that we've done so far. So that it's down, and it's down over the next few weeks and couple of months, then sort of lags along during the summer. We'll still have cases, and then probably pick back up in the fall. But the difference is, by spreading it out like that, we're getting smarter every single day. And we're going to figure out, how can we do more social distancing but keep our economy intact? I think the president's doing the right thing, and we've done social distancing. We're going to get very smart on how to do that and still have an economy. Secondly, is increasing the supplies that we're bringing to communities. We're buying PPE. I think we'll probably be drowning in masks a month from now, but we have the critical need now. We need to help very specific places, because it's not going to be just one giant wave. You have big hot spots, and some of them will be small and some will be large. And I think we can do that. I think we can continue to attack these.
All right. Well, Dr. Collier, we really appreciate you coming on the program. Thanks for keeping us updated on all of this. That's the most important thing, is getting facts to the people, and we appreciate that.
You know, we're going to win this thing. It's going to be tough. We're going to have swings going back and forth, but we're going to win, you know, and we're going to win with God's grace. We're going to win with American ingenuity, and we're going to win because we are families and we believe in each other. God bless you, my friend.
All right. God bless you, too. Dr. Jeff Collier, ladies and gentlemen, good man out there in the heartland, a former governor of Kansas, working with the Trump administration and rural hospitals out there. It was interesting. Laura Ingraham posted a tweet just a little while ago. She points out something about these projections. You know, we've been looking at the projections of who's going to get the virus, how many people are going to be hospitalized, how many people are going to possibly lose their lives. Ingraham points out that the UK, after only 2 days of its national shutdown, realized that their doomsday projections were faulty, that there were errors. She says our shutdown response was also based on those numbers. So, again, just something for all of us to consider here. I don't think we're to the point yet where I can honestly say what I think is ultimately behind all of this, but we're getting pretty close. Charlie Kirk writes, this is disgraceful. General Motors was the recipient of over $13 billion in America's last bailout. They promised to make 40,000 ventilators, but now say they can only produce 6,000. Shame on General Motors. Well, look, the question is, are we going to need all of those? And as you heard Dr. Collier say, I mean, you know, we could end up having a stockpile of 10, 15, who knows, 20 million masks. I mean, where are you going to put all that? It just makes no sense. So I'm watching again this video. We're going to post a link to the video on our live show blog. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she is spitting mad. Let's take a listen to that audio.
The gentlelady from Michigan is out of order. The gentlelady from Michigan is no longer.
That's the wrong audio there. This is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from New York.
Fight for one of the largest corporate bailouts with as few strings as possible in American history. Shameful. The greed of that fight is wrong for crumbs, for our families. And the option that we have is to either let them suffer with nothing or to allow this greed and billions of dollars, which will be leveraged into trillions of dollars, to contribute to the largest income inequality gap in our future. There should be shame about what was fought for in this bill and the choices that we have to make.
There you go. It's honestly, you got to see the video. It's unbelievable, this one. So we posted that on the website, toddstarns.com. House, by the way, this is breaking news. The House has passed the stimulus package. So there you go, for what it's worth. It's another loss. And I hate to say this, but President Trump let the American people down on this one. I think a lot of people are buying into the hype and the hysteria, and I believe our president, shame on you, Mr. President, on this one. Going after conservatives for standing up for fiscal responsibility. Somebody's got to stand up and say what needs to be said around here. So there you go. 844-747-8868. Toll-free number. That's 844-747-8868. This is the Todd Starnes Show.
It's the Todd Starnes Radio Show.
Welcome back to the Todd Starnes radio program. Breaking news out of Washington, where the House of Representatives just signed off on that massive $2 trillion coronavirus spending bill that funds Howard University, the Internal Revenue Service, the National Endowments for the Arts, and the Kennedy Center. So at least you'll be able to go and watch a Broadway show or catch a poetry slam. There it is. New York Times blames evangelical Christians for the coronavirus. Of course they did. Well, that's a story up on the live show blog. I want to go right now to the Liberty University Newsmaker line. What an honor to have with us the governor of the great state of South Dakota. Beautiful state, by the way. Governor Kristi Noem. Governor, hope you're doing well.
We are. We're doing good, Todd. Thanks for having me on your show.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the situation there in South Dakota. A lot of the attention, you know, in the big cities, but what's happening in your state?
Well, you know, we're doing well. We've taken this seriously since the beginning, started preparing and educating the people of South Dakota back in January about this. My Department of Health was prepared, and as of today, have the lowest number of cases in the country. And I think it's because we've relied on South Dakotans to take personal responsibility for their actions. They're making the decision to change their way of doing business. They're practicing social distancing, but they're still taking care of each other. So I'm just incredibly proud of our people and the example that they're setting.
And I have to imagine in a place like South Dakota, you know, West Tennessee, which is where I'm from, that's big farming country. You know, you don't have a lot of people to be around. So you kind of practice social distancing every day. So it's a lot different than being in New York City.
Yes, it is. Our demographics and how we're dispersed throughout the state is pretty different than New York City, although we do have some pretty populated areas. You know, we've got some bigger cities. We also have some really remote areas. I think our rural nature is helping us, but in those bigger cities, you know, we've had to do a lot more communication with people, talking to them about the facts and the data that we have, and that they're responsible for their actions, that we want them to be smart and to take care of not just their families and their neighbors, but also if they're running a business, their customers, too. So it's something that we're trying to keep in perspective and do the right thing.
Governor, I'm curious about the federal government. Are you guys getting the resources you need from the Trump administration and the government?
We are. They've been doing very well the last week or so. We had a point in time where we were not getting supplied with some chemicals and reagents that we needed in our public health lab. But I reached out to the president and vice president on that, and within a day or two, we were supplied again. So we're doing pretty well. Obviously, there's a crunch nationwide on different supplies. We're just being very proactive. We're thinking 30 days out, what will we run short on, and putting the request in now just to make sure that we're taking care of the situation here on the ground. So, yeah, they've been doing a good job at being responsive, and we sure appreciate that.
You know, one of the things that's really impressed me with your approach, which is a little different from other states, you guys really are letting the local communities within South Dakota make decisions and work on policies that work for them.
Well, I put out an executive order statewide that gave direction on following CDC guidelines. I did not shut down businesses. I don't think we should be shutting down businesses in the state, that we should be using you know, our facts and the data that we have, and recognizing this isn't a sprint. It's not going to be over in a week or two. We have a marathon in front of us, and that we have to allow these business owners to innovate and to be creative in how they conduct business and help take care of their employees that need to have some cash flow to, you know, keep food on the table for their families. So, you know, if local communities and cities want to go above and beyond that, you know, they can. They have the latitude to do that. I just have chosen not to close businesses and tell them that they should restrict the size of crowds. the 10 and under is recommended and followed, and that they need to make sure they are practicing social distancing and hygiene and cleaning protocols that are recommended.
You know, Governor, before we let you go, I was scrolling through your Twitter page, which is really, you've got a great Twitter feed there. Booker, who is Booker? And he plays the ukulele. What's going on there?
He does. That's my son. He's my youngest child, and things you learn when you're in quarantine is, who knew he can play the ukulele?
That's terrific.
He's pretty good at it, too. So by a special request, he will do more performances for the world if they would like.
You know, we had Dr. Robert Jeffers on, you know, the minister who's on Fox all the time. He plays the accordion, and we had no idea. So you're right. Everybody's discovering these incredibly talented people across the country.
We call that the squeeze box, and I've always wanted to learn how to play one of those.
He might be able to give you lessons. You never know, Governor.
That'd be great. That'd
well,
be great.
Look, thank you so much for coming on the program, and all the best to the good people there in South Dakota. You guys be safe.
Yes, you guys too. Thanks so much for what you're doing, keeping people informed.
All right, Governor Kristi Noem from South Dakota. Folks, we're going to post this a link to the Twitter video. She's right. The kid's got some skills there on the ukulele. Caleb and Avery, what is it with it's like all these talented folks out there?
I have no idea, but I just really want to hear Robert Jeffers play the accordion again.
It just brings a smile to my face. That may be our new theme music moving forward in a post-coronavirus, post-apocalyptic world.
Well, certainly anytime we need a pick-me-up, that is that'll be helpful.
So we're gonna post this video of Governor Noem's son playing the ukulele on our live show blog. So you'll be able to check that out during the news break. Hey, by the way, coming up in the next hour of the program, we're gonna be talking to our friends at First Liberty Institute. There are some concerns about civil liberties under attack, and we're gonna check in with our good friend Hiram Sasser from First Liberty Institute. Also, there is a terrific pizza joint out in Arizona. And they're one of these companies out there, they're giving back to the community. And they're doing it in a very clever way. And we're going to talk to the owner of this awesome pizza joint out there in Arizona. And you may know of somebody, you may know of a business, you may know of a restaurant, somebody doing something good in your community, in your town. We would love to be able to promote that and tell folks about some of the good Samaritans out there. So give us a call if you know of a story, 844-747-8868. That's 844-747-8868. This is the Todd Stern Show.